Adventurers spend a great deal of time delving into dungeons, uncovering lost secrets, and slaying monsters. Well, in between all the action, they need a bit of a break from the familiar. What better way than a minigame?
Well, the game, so to speak.
Well, then hold on to your lug nuts, fellas, and your dice, girls, because join us as we discuss how to create and run minigames in Dungeons & Dragons. Hello and welcome, heroes, to the Crit Academy. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your guest, Jeffrey Golden.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
I'm your co-host, Brandon.
Yeah.
And we hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next adventure.
Lots of it. We are so excited to talk mini games. Today we are joined by Jeffrey Golden, designer and game maker. Jeffrey, for those who don't know, can you tell us a little bit about what you do in the world of tabletop and Dungeons & Dragons and all that jazz? Games in general.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, folks. This is so much fun. I'm so glad to be here. I'm a narrative designer for video games and a tabletop role-playing game creator. I've written for Capcom, Square Enix, Disney Interactive, and some of my tabletop projects include Helm Greycastle for Image Comics and the official Wet Hot American Summer role-playing game called Fantasy Camp.
Oh my.
Well, that put my resume to shame.
Yeah, I wrote some stuff. But I've got nothing to compare. So I'm really excited to have you on. There's lots of good stuff. We're going to be talking a little bit, not only about minigames, about one of yours that I picked up that I really enjoyed, which is Target Run. As we kind of go through that, we'll kind of talk about that as we end towards the discussion, because I think you found a great way to kind of compile all of that stuff. So I think the best way to start this off is, you said you wanted to include a mini game in our show today. Is that correct?
Absolutely, folks. Okay. So here it is. My ancient wizard wand. Magical wizard wand. And I have here. Folks watching at home, count the number of times I flip the wand and the sand and the things, the little things inside go all the way to the bottom throughout the stream. And if you get it, that one doesn't count. That was a demo. Don't count that one. If you count that one, you'll be wrong. Count how many times I do it during the stream, and you will win and be the first to answer correctly in the chat, and you will win a prize.
Yes,
a rad prize.
Yes, I can confirm the prize is awesome.
Is it a rad robot?
It's right on target, actually, for the show. So, so I guess the we got to start this off is, what is a minigame for those that don't know?
Absolutely. So, look, as I see it, a minigame is a standalone game that lives within a larger game experience, as opposed to, say, like a micro RPG, which is a small game that lives entirely on its own, or like a puzzle trap in a castle, which I'd call something more like an element. Basically, yeah, mini games are the games within games. And sometimes a game is full of mini games. And, you know, like just thinking on the video game side, like WarioWare, for example, that's like a classic game that is just really a series of mini games all spliced together. But then other games sometimes contain mini games, and particularly there's one great example I can think of off the top of my head. There was a magazine, a D&D magazine called Rolled and Told, and they published comics as well as like adventure modules. And one of theirs was called Ghost Carnival, and it was really it's a really fun module if you can find it. Basically, your adventurers are like lured into an enchanted carnival run by ghosts, and you have to figure out how to escape. But within the carnival, there are a bunch of carnival-themed mini-games that you can play, and they tie into the greater adventure. So sometimes a big game could be made up of a bunch of mini games, and sometimes you might have one or two or three mini games within a larger game. But that's how I would define a mini game.
And I think that's pretty accurate. Oh. I mean, I think everyone's played a mini game once or twice in their day, whether it was through a video game or in tabletop. I think D&D actually has a pretty popular, well, at least it used to be a popular mini game called like Three Dragon Ante, I think. So there's already precedent for those kind of being in at least the Dungeons & Dragons world. Have you guys played any other mini games in D&D?
No, I was wrong about mini games.
What do you mean?
I thought a mini game was a game you could put in your pocket.
Oh God, I hate you.
I mean, you're not wrong.
A little baby game. No, a tiny little game you can pick up and put in your pocket.
No, I have not played a mini game in D&D.
Oh man, that's so sad. What about you, Ian?
I feel like I played a few here and there, but they're pretty few and far between overall.
Yeah, I've played Three Dragon Ante. There's one I've actually used recently, and I think I don't remember who came up with this. It's not a unique idea to me. And sorry, if you know who created the bomb defusal minigame, please let me know. But when I was running Capes and Crooks, I found on the internet a bomb defusal. It's a mini game for D&D where one person's got to defuse a bomb, and it's based on dice roll, and they have to get them in sequential order, and you can use knowledge checks to kind of help, but they're all even, or they're a straight, basically. And their checks kind of determine what they might be, but you only give them some of the rolls, so it's left blank, and they kind of have to figure it out. And that was one of the coolest mini games that I had played in D&D because it built up so much tension. I think that kind of is generally a minigame is designed to relieve tension most of the time. So this one was kind of opposite of what I normally expect, but I really enjoyed. So I'm really excited to kind of walk through the process with you of how the development process goes, you know, because making a game, not easy, even if it's a small game, because you're still making a game just with less rules or on a smaller scale.
I think one of the closest times that we've done a minigame in one of your games was when my halfling monk wanted to fight a cage match. We found one, but you made... and you basically made like three skill checks back to back.
Yep.
Good time.
Good time. I actually think 4th edition did it really well with skill challenges.
Yeah.
I would argue that that's a minigame within Dungeons & Dragons too. With that, what's the favorite minigame you've ever played in a tabletop?
Oh my goodness! What a great
it's
question!
Like, I got options.
I got so many. There's so many. It's hard to think. There's one I read about just recently. I love playing D&D, but mostly because all of my friends are very busy. Mostly, I read D&D modules, and then I'm like, imagine what it would be like to play this. Wouldn't that be fun? What if I had friends who had the time to play this with me? Wouldn't that be cool? There was one that I read that was really fun, where you were like, it was like one of those classic, like toss the ball into one of those cardigan little games, like one of those into like a milk jar kind of thing. But it was like the module was themed around like aquatic stuff. And so it was like you were throwing the pearls into like clams, into like the mouths of clams, and like the clams could like open and shut. And I was like, oh, that's like really cool. And it was like really easy, just like an accuracy check, you know, just a really easy mechanic. But it seemed like it would be fun to imagine like, oh, yeah, I'm trying to like throw pearls into like the mouths of these things. It's really cool. Gives you a nice visual and also tied in nicely with the theme.
It will make that great is if they're doing all these accuracy checks and no matter how high it is, they just keep missing and they start putting two and two together and they realize it's rigged.
which is, I think, is okay.
It could be a story. Element too. It's like it's really not about the mini game. It's really about the intentions of the NPC who's the carnival barker, right?
Oh, I like that. I like that. And that could be a whole adventure writing itself. That hey, people are are disappearing and they can't figure out why. And it's this one seedy carnival person is rigged a game so that and starts, you know, letting them win, then puts a big, big reward on there. And if they lose, it's like, well, if you lose, you'll have to go and play this other game with my friend who just kidnaps them. I don't know. I'm thinking like, what is it? Hustling, right?
Uh-huh.
Where you let them win a bunch. And then when the pot is really big, you swipe it out from underneath them.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, the mystery of the casino, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah, and you get into big trouble. It's like that movie, was it 21?
Yeah.
Yes.
Where they're like MIT card counters, but then they end up getting caught and they end up going into the back room.
The
big
house
trouble.
Always wins.
Yeah. House, yes. So now we've kind of discussed kind of at length what minigames are and kind of some of our favorite ones. How does one go about starting creating a minigame? What is the first steps to creating a minigame?
Great. So I would say for me, it's about necessity. Like within the larger context of the campaign, you know, what do I need here? It's like, what would be a good beat to have? So just like when you're designing a larger campaign, you're thinking about story beats, right? Like what would be a good story beat to have here? You might also think like, well, you know what, for pacing purposes, I actually need something here that's going to take them off the main quest. I need something here, a different type of beat, you know, than they would normally have.
Right.
So for me, a lot of it comes down when I'm first thinking about it, it comes down to theming, right? So how does a mini game streamline with the narrative, emotional or mechanical themes in a larger game? So, for example, you know, is for some, like we're talking about Carnival, right? So like mm-hmm. that one is like a gimme, right? If you're doing, if your narrative takes you into a Carnival scenario, you're naturally going to want to put mini games in because the players are going to naturally want to interact with those, right. You know, with those story elements. But there may be other reasons too. Like, for example, you know, you're in a tavern, right? Like, and you know that your players are like a little antsy. Maybe they like to drink. Maybe they like to goof around in the tavern. Maybe you want to supply them with a mini game. Like, you know, you know that they aren't going to like sit down in front of the quest giver immediately and like be like, what's my quest? Or got anything for me? They like to explore. Your players like to explore. So yeah, maybe you're going to build in like a darts type game, you know, or like a, you know, cornhole or something like that, like some version of that, that they could play. They could play while they're drinking and have a little bit of fun in the tavern. You know, so there might be reasons that your players like it. There also might be emotional reasons to do it too. So for example, you know, your players may have just come off of an intense campaign, right? Of just a bruising, horrible campaign. Oh, maybe one of them died, you know, maybe one of the player characters died, you know, everybody's feeling really sad. That may not be a great time to send them out on another epic quest,
right?
You know, immediately, right? So you may be thinking, okay, like what's a fun like mini game type thing that we could do instead? Maybe it's like a scavenger hunt kind of a mechanic, you know, something to take their mind off the big story and give them some breathing room, something, you know, just something they could do to relax for a bit. So I always think about the needs of the story and the needs of the players when I'm designing a mini game and thinking about doing it.
That's actually a really interesting point because sometimes there are some classes, and I'm just going to call out the rogue right now, that part of their whole persona is the gambling and the dice and the thieving and the sleight of hand. And that is a really good opportunity to let that aspect of the game shine as well, because you totally could offer a game to everyone, have fun, and turn to your rogue and say, so as the dice are being tossed, are you willing to place a bet, gamble, or even stack it in their favor? You know, because then you can give them the opportunity to play in a way that doesn't usually come up in the traditional adventure, which I think is really good. Not now, the rogue isn't the only one that can do this. Any criminal background or, you know, whatever can do it. But typically, it's kind of the rogue shtick, right?
Yeah.
You know, Kyle Saunders here in chat said he loves the idea of the opportunity to have the players gamble their winnings from a quest.
Yes.
Which led to me a train of thought of, what if your gambling actually led to a quest where they basically went to a gambling den of some kind, but it was clearly rigged against the players, but the guy's like, oh, no, you lost. Well, I guess we need to come up with a way to pay off your debt. Do this for me.
I like that.
Absolutely. Or it could be that they gambled some rare item. They have to get that item.
Oh,
back.
And it wasn't even their item.
They were supposed to get
an item. I love it. So you're talking about gambling and losing an item they got to get back, but maybe they were delivering and the rogues got a little itchy spot and it's like, I don't have anything. Ooh, this thing. I'm not going to lose it. My luck is hot tonight.
Hey, snake eyes.
Crap. So I think it can lead a lot. So.
Yeah, I was looking at Silver Wolf's comment that thieves and arcane tricksters could really be good at the dice rolling things. Because the arcane trickster gets mage hand, but it's invisible.
Yeah. Ooh, sneaky. I think I wonder if that's proficient enough to be able to do like sleight of hand checks with it.
That's kind of their whole thing, so.
Nice. Start your adventure today.
Experience tabletop RPGs run by professional game masters.
StartPlaying.games is the largest online platform for players to find tabletop role-playing and professional GMs for any game system and any virtual tabletop.
Are you looking to play D&D online or find a virtual Pathfinder 2E group?
StartPlaying is part tabletop group finder and part games finder. Their professional game masters are running games all over the world.
We've both had some fantastic experiences with the user-friendly and intuitive platform.
In addition, the community and support are grade A.
If you're a greenhorn or a veteran role player or a power gamer, you can easily find a game that works for you and your schedule.
Visit startplaying.games today and join some new friends in your favorite tabletop RPG game, or even give a new one a try. Okay, so we've got a theme, right? Usually, it sounds like you usually want to design a game with an intent of a particular theme or emotional response. After a big, heavy, focused, player character dying moment, tossing in something that relieves that stress is really good. But you could go the other way. Maybe they've had a bunch of carefree adventures. And they end up in a situation where it all comes down to a game of dice or a game of cards, and everything is riding on that.
You could do like a variation of, like, it's just thinking like those like mob mini games, and the one I'm thinking of is you put your hand out and like knife between the fingers kind of thing, right?
The knife game.
Like you could do some intense stuff, like the characters may be being forced to play like twisted games against each other. You could do like a Saw kind of thing and like a horror one, where they have to get out of this some kind of horrible game, some kind of horrible game.
I was just thinking what he was saying. It's like, I got all my fingers, I rolled a fucking one.
How's the rest of that go? Now I'm down one finger. I'll try out for another one. I don't know, but
nothing Squid Game.
Right? Squid. I mean, basically, we're talking about Squid Game. You could do it where you put a die in between each of your fingers, and then you like drop your hand down, like you open up your fingers and like let the dice fall, and see like which fingers your character loses. Super dark.
But that's perfect for that, right? And so, and you can rack up the tension by instead of it just losing a finger, the blade is also poison now. So maybe it's got like crawler mucus poison that paralyzes you, then they can just do whatever they want with you. So you can stack the risks. Now, we talked about, so that shows us the different, the variety, right? From fun and whimsical to I'm going to lose a finger or my life. And I think including those can go beyond the more traditional. I think you touched on it with like the reference to the what is the stupid movie, scary movie you were just talking about? People...
It's like Saw.
Yeah, Saw. Thank you. Dear God. I watched like three of them and I still couldn't remember the name. But that's a really good example because that's got a bunch of variety of kind of themes that aren't the traditional dice or playing cards. So I think that's really good. So now that we got a theme, how do we, how do you go about maybe developing the mechanics? For RPGs, I can see us traditionally just using dice to roll and determine, the traditional dice rolls to determine success and outcomes. But say I wanted to get more involved, how would you go about creating one with a little bit more mechanics involved that aren't the traditional ones? For example, like what I talked about with the disabling the bomb, where they roll three or five dice and they have to get so many in a certain condition and in a sequence.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so so one way to do that, so it made me think about what we did for your question made me think about what we did for the Wet Hot American Summer role-playing game. So there were two modes in that game. One is you could play as a camper and one you could play as a counselor. So the counselor had like their own thing. But the campers, what we did was we basically created a bunch of mini games for them to play as camp activities. And so so the mini games, we took them from real camp games that you would play. So like we did, like we had like an arts and crafts mini game where like players were given like actual bucket of markers, and they're like told to draw, and like whoever the counselor thinks drew the most accurate or drew the funniest thing would win points. We did one where it was ghost stories, where people would tell like actual ghost stories around, you know, they'd have a flashlight and they would tell ghost stories to each other, and whoever the camp director thought had the scariest story would win. So I think for mini games, it's fun to like incorporate, especially for a role-playing game, to incorporate like actual real elements of the thing you're doing. Like even with gambling, I mean, I see with a lot of like incorporating of, mini games into like D&D, like card games and stuff. It's usually done with dice roll, but like, there's no reason why you can't play blackjack and real life, you know,
right,
play around
right,
blackjack.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Get out a deck of cards and like play blackjack. You know, these things aren't necessarily like super tricky to do. And so I think it could be fun to sort of design around that, you know, like for the bomb mechanic, like cutting the right wire, like mm-hmm. you could do some, like I could imagine something almost like an activity, like you get those like a dinner placemat kind of thing, where it's like, oh, okay, like match the symbol to this symbol, and you like drawing, and you're trying to draw it as accurately as possible on the line, you know, like something like that could be a lot of fun, and would be like a surprise, I think, to the players.
I feel like Brandon's about to burst. What is going on over here?
Fucking wife.
Yeah, Brandon, get in here.
I was laughing at that. No, I had a thought involving mini games, throwing them in there.
Okay.
What if at the beginning of your adventure, you play a terrible RPG with all the players, and then whatever happens in terrible RPG happens that night in game?
So I don't know.
Perfect for a horror RPG.
So if the audience doesn't know, terrible RPG is fantastic. You so basically write some details on a piece of paper of your powers and abilities, and you have to tear at least like a 1 inch, but you can only use it until you tear it all away. So you got to be very precise and stuff. And sometimes the paper's like F you, and it just, but very, very fun. And I think we've talked about something like that before. We did, when we covered solo D&D toolkit and running your own solo adventures to building backstories, that could just as easily be a tool for, you know, mini game exploration as well. So,
and I can also see like, I mentioned this in chat, but like finally like a halfway point in between playing the actual game and rolling dice. Like you guys play like a 5-card draw or some other poker game, but you use like a 5d6 instead.
Ooh, I like that.
Absolutely.
Another.
Yeah, I love that.
And you could be playing like a high stakes game, like you bet like fragments of your soul or memories.
Right. And I don't know if anybody knows, but to my understanding, it's very difficult to copyright like gameplay mechanics. So you could use like a Yahtzee Use the Yahtzee mechanic and use that as a way to run a different type of game. It doesn't have to be Yahtzee. It could be a variant game dice game that happens in your world, and maybe it's got less dice or something like that. And there, instead of, you know, 1 through 6, it's, you know, a goblin's head, a kobold's head, or whatever. And so it's no longer getting, you know, 4 of a kind, it's getting 4 goblins or you know, or something like that. I don't
know. Or put your miniatures in with the dice, you know, depending on where the miniatures land. You know, that could be determine your fate, like a fortune telling kind of thing. You know.
That's cool.
There's I think that's great advice. And so yeah, I'd say think creative. Like I'd say that would be my big advice. It's like, you know, you can use the mechanics that you have, but also feel free to bring in mechanics that don't, you know, the things that aren't part of D&D or aren't part of the RPG that you're playing. And yeah, break. I think when you do that, it creates a really memorable experience.
Oh yeah.
Right. Cause like, you know, okay. Like, yeah, we're going to roll dice to determine, you know, who got the best hand or whatever. But like when somebody pulls out those cards, it's like, you don't forget that. Like, it's like, it's a tactile thing. It's different, and it's like, oh yeah, remember when we busted out the Yahtzee thing, and you know, 2 months ago in that session, that was so much fun.
Who can make the tallest dice tower with D6s?
Ooh. Yeah, Jenga
tower with D&D. Getty, getting bad at things actually says, have you heard of Donjon D. Nahabouk, a French parody of D&D? I have not, but that sounds awesome. Anything that's a parody is my jams. So I'm definitely interested in checking that out. So
me too.
One thing you had mentioned in one of the emails is about pacing. And could you, so it's made you and it sounds like that's important, but I don't know that I understand exactly. Can you tell us what you mean by making sure you have pacing in your mini games?
Right. Absolutely. So, you know, typically we, and again, this all comes down to author's intent, right? To the DM's intent. You know, if you want to play this mini game for the entire session, like whatever mini games you come up with, like by all means do it. But I imagine the way I see mini games in D&D is that it's often sort of it could be used as an icebreaker. It could be used, you know, in a way to sort of break up the pacing of the normal flow of a D&D session, of a story session, right? So in that case, you don't want it to take over the session, right? So you might be getting really into this like card game mechanic, right? But like you could play that, you might decide, oh, you know, your players might get super into it and they may just like want to be playing that the whole time. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, we didn't get to any of my story. We just played this, like, we just played poker. And it's like, I like poker, but I'm here to play D&D. So some suggestions, consider time limits. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, for example, the bomb mini game that you mentioned before, perfect example. There's a hard time limit there. You know, if you don't solve this mini, if you don't do this mini game fast enough, boom, you're going to take some damage. You know, there's an explosion. Other time limit, you know, we're talking about like a casino, right? You know, oh, the bouncer comes and kicks out the players, you know? Right. So that's one thing. Another thing is finite goals, right? So like if your mini game, you know, okay, your characters are trying to, you know, get some to win a gold key of some kind. Like, oh, they won the gold key. Your mini game has succeeded, you know. So you have a set goal there as opposed to something that could just go on, could loop on endlessly. And then another way to test pacing, of course, is playtesting, if you can. And there's really no substitute for playtesting. Nope. You know, with a mini game, you know, you could, in theory, you could play it with anybody, even somebody who doesn't play D&D that much, because it's by definition, it's mini.
Right.
So hopefully, mechanically, it's relatively simple. So you could teach them the rules and then play, you know, with somebody with a friend or a spouse or somebody who doesn't play, and to just see what their reaction to it is. See, like, if it's the intent, if you're getting the intended emotional reaction, if you're getting the intended pacing, you know, playtest, as they say.
Yes, that's definitely something that is important in any development process. And mm-hmm. The because the only way you're going to find faults that you didn't plan for is by playtesting. So definitely do that. So there's a lot to think about when developing a minigame. There's a lot of work that kind of goes involved, but you're definitely, seems like you're encouraged to pull inspiration from wherever you can find it, mix and match ideas, make sure pacing is good. But more than anything, it needs to be fun.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes in game design, we come up with something, we think it's going to be fun, we think it works, and then we play test it and we find out maybe not so much, you know? Yep. And that is, don't get discouraged. That is part of the experience. And, you know, like as a game designer, you know, I've gone through dozens of, you know, little prototypes, little things, ideas I've written down here and there. It's just, you know, there's sometimes you figure it out. Sometimes it's just part of the creative process. You like, you're playing one game, it doesn't quite work. You're playing another game, it works a little bit better, but there's something missing. You take an element from the first game that you created that didn't work, suddenly you marry those two together. Oh, that was it. That was the thing that it was missing. So the process of designing, of continuing to design, you get better at designing, and also you have more tools that you can draw from.
Yeah, I've learned a lot of that when I'm designing like player options. I've been trying, to me, they're almost like tiny little mini games when you want to make a new concept, because you're basically trying to figure out how can I make this different than what already exists on a lesser scale than a mini game. Because that's basically whatever character class in D&D is, you know, is basically a mini game with inside the character class, which is really interesting. So a lot of this applies to dungeon mastering, development of monsters and character classes as well.
Exactly. I mean, you're basically trying to give the player a new experience with that class, right? You're trying to set, you know, and you're in the design sense, it's like, okay, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we could do this in D&D? And like, yeah, mini games, it's the same thing. Like, wouldn't it be cool if we could do this type of game, if we could play this type of game, if we could have this type of experience for whatever reason. And like, that's like the main utility of mini games. It's the novelty. It's the novelty of emotion. It's the novelty of storytelling. It's the novelty of mechanics.
Absolutely.
So I want you to tell us about Target Run. Yes. I think this is a great example of the fun mini game that you can add to your tabletop experience.
I loved reading through this. It was so much fun. I can't wait to run it.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. So Target Run it's actually my first. So I've been making role playing game stuff for since 2012, but it's my first product on DM's Guild, and I'm very excited. It debuted at number one in the community economy category, which was super exciting. So basically, Target Run is a D&D adventure inspired by my love for 80s sports comedies, like Caddyshack. Mighty Ducks is 90s, but Major League, Mighty Ducks. You know, the snobs versus the slobs, the goofball team that can pull it together at the last minute. I love those movies. I love those stories. And so my challenge to myself was, could I bring that kind of experience to D&D? And that's what Target Run is. So basically, Target Run is a sports comedy adventure. You are in the entourage of Taz Van, who is a dwarf. She is funny. She is rude. She is crude. She is wealthy. And she's hiring you and the players to help her break the elf ceiling of a game called Allegan, which is an archery sport. And it's like a team archery sport that kind of takes elements from hockey and laser tag and archery, puts them all together. And this sport is played by high elves in a very exclusive treetop resort. Called Overtop Heights. And Kazvin wants to be the first elf to play Allegan professionally at Overtop Heights, first dwarf to do it. And so you're helping her do that to achieve her dreams. And the way she does it is she goads one of the guys there, the top guy there, basically into a wager that says, if you, the adventurers, and Tazvan together, a ragtag group can beat the all-stars of Alagan, Tazvan will get to play professionally and will get to join a team, an Alagan team. And so so there's a high-stakes game of Alagan that you are playing with your team. And then there's a lot of side adventures, too, because I think part of the fun of these movies, it's not just the sport itself. It's also like
the shenanigans that's going on the other areas.
So Overtop Heights is designed to be, can I swear on this podcast?
Fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah. It's designed to be fucked with. So there's like a fancy dinner party that you and the adventurers are meant to crash and destroy. There's, a group of pixie revolutionaries who are trying to take back the land. This Overtop Heights was their land. They're trying to take it back, and you can join them and help overthrow Overtop Heights for a good cause. So there's all kinds of stuff that you can do in the module.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
I was thinking archery plus laser tag equals Hunger Games.
Yeah, I love laser tag. I'm a big laser tag fan. The saddest things is that I haven't played, since the pandemic, I haven't played laser tag in a while, but I feel like that would be like among the worst things one can do in a pandemic. Somehow I feel like laser tag is full of COVID, and I don't know that for sure, but I just feel it.
Absolutely.
It feels true. All the mist, that COVID spreading, or I don't know. But Target Run is an example of, so basically I was trying to, I had the idea for the story, and then I was like, oh, I need a sport. Like I need a sport that they could be playing. And so the module is sort of built around the mini game of Alagan. Basically it takes combat mechanics, but sort of translates them into some non-lethal and into non-lethal action. That's more about, so it's more about like physical strategy. Where are you going to be on the board? Are you going to play? What players are going to play offense? What players are going to play defense?
Right, right.
You know, there's a lot of strategy that goes into the game. And by the way, Alagan is designed to be played separately from Target Run. So it's sort of like a two for you. Get the adventure module, and you also get the sport that you can play.
That's one of the things in your own that you did that I really liked about it. So overall, I'm really excited. I think if you haven't checked out Target Run, you need to. There's been a link in the doobly-doo somewhere, I'm sure. Is there anything on mini games you want to touch on before we move on to our next segment?
Only that I encourage you to do it, because I encourage you to build mini games into your adventure. Because D&D is an amazing game. It has so much. It offers so much variety and so much depth. But it also offers a lot of flexibility. And I think mini games take advantage of that flexibility. And so as a DM, especially if you're looking to give your players a new and unique experience, to a memorable experience, I highly recommend putting a mini game in your game or your stream, your YouTube live stream.
I see what you did there.
I'll be able to be paying attention.
I wasn't at all. And I'm looking right at him. With that, I think that'll conclude our main topic, how to create and run mini games in Dungeons & Dragons. How about we move on to, before we move on to our Unearthed Tips and Tricks, we have another shameless plug. Fantastic Feats of Forgotten Realms, now available on DM's Guild. One of the best parts of Dungeons & Dragons is creating your character. And when it comes to this, you can never have enough options. In this book, you'll be able to find 55 new feats for your Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition game. Now, whether you're looking to enhance your role-playing, your skills, or your combat utility, you're certainly going to find something that'll fit your playstyle. So if this sounds like something you want to check out, head on over to rebrand.ly/fantasticfeats. And I can assure you, the stuff is awesome, and I'm not just saying that because I wrote it.
if the shoe fits.
It looks awesome. I love the cover, by the way. The art is so cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm sure everyone will love it. Check it out. Make sure to leave a review, too.
Hey, D&D players. Do you love D&D? How about an actual play with phenomenal stories, endearing characters, and a great story? How about a D&D 5e story that launches you into a sci-fi world where the players discover lost astronauts, disappearing spaceships, battle robotic beastmasters, delve into lost planetary runes? Well, then you need to check out the Homebrew Podcast. This fantastic D&D actual play takes your D&D experience into space. Join these characters through their trials and tribulations, as well as their hilarious shenanigans. Be with them when they pick up their first spaceship at Old Honest Jim's Used Spaceship Emporium Clearance Yard. You should head on over and check out the Homebrew Podcast on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you find your podcasts.
And now, what you've all been waiting for. Our Unearth Tips and Tricks segment, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
So our character concept comes compliments of our wonderful guest, Jeffrey. Would you like to hit us up with Tazvan, the female dwarf?
Absolutely, yeah. We were talking about Tazvan. She's the star of Target Run, and let me introduce you to her. So, Tazvan is a young dwarf with bright green eyes, a big goofy smile, and long reddish hair tied into an updo. She wears a sleeveless wool top with tough leather shoulder pads and knee pads, along with sturdy boots. Armed with only a simple circular wooden shield, she wears a gold necklace and carries bags of gold in her pockets, because you never know when you'll need some gold. I always find myself in need of gold at certain times. So always glad to have throw that as a problem.
I agree.
So that's a description of what she looks like. Her personality: Tazvan is a rich, boisterous, and fun-loving superfan of the high elf sport Allegan. Now, dwarves are not allowed to play Allegan at the highest level, but that hasn't dampened her enthusiasm. Tazvan trains every day with her regulation Allegan shield. Her constant jokes and jabs, social stamina, and willingness to tip big, bigger the life of any party, and the bane of straight-laced authority figures, like the kind who tend to run Allegan tournaments. So building some conflict right into a personality.
I love it.
Her history. All her life, Tazvan has been obsessed with Allegan, much to the bewilderment of her dwarf family and friends. When she was a kid, she had an overtop Allegan talus set, hard to get in the hilltops. She became a miner and saved a stockpile of gold to venture from the hills into the forest to try her hand at professional Allegan at Overtop Heights, the elite elven treetop resort. Though Tazvan presents as a dwarf, she doesn't know her real father was actually a wood elf. So there's some
plot twist.
There's some background to why she might be so interested in Allegan and elf stuff. Her motivation: Tazvan is determined to break through the elf ceiling and become the first dwarf to play Allegan at Overtop Heights. She wants to see her childhood dream come true. Or as she would put it, I want to be an Allegan legend. I can't go back to the mines. I'm allergic to hard work.
I love it. Can I? We just say that?
I can't get a job.
Can we just say elf ceiling, a.k.a. racist bastards?
Yeah. There's a moment when the players come first enter Overtop Heights, and the receptionist, who's like well-meaning but has never met any non-elves, like systematically like insults like all the players. You're very hairy, you know. You're a very weird looking, you know,
and stout?
Right, yeah.
What is that thing on your face attacking you? It's my beard.
Is that hard for you?
I'm now picturing her home life growing up. Tazvan, why do you keep being the elk crap? Like wood. Why can't you build something else strong with you, like stone?
I love it. That is such a fun and great character concept. Please consider including it in your games, either as an NPC or a PC player or Crit Nation. I love this. I think you did a wonderful job designing her, and she just has so much personality. So thank you for sharing her with us.
Of course. Happy to.
With that, we'll move on to our monster variant, the Justicar. So in order to build the Justicar, as always, you're going to start off with a pre-designed stat block, the Oni. Then you're going to remove some of its features. We're going to drop its spell list, we're going to drop regeneration, and its glaive is going to be replaced by a maul, and it's going to lose chain shape and claw. Basically stripping most of the stuff away that makes it an Oni. We're keeping all the raw mechanics.
We just want the numbers.
Right. Because it makes it balancing easier. the new spell list is going to be 2 cantrips, mending and thermaturgy. 3 a day can cast Divine Favor, Guiding Bolt, and Speak with Dead. I'm starting to sense a theme, Justin. Twice a day, it can do Lesser Restoration and Silence, and then once a day, it can do Death Ward. So what makes the Justicar so awesome? I'm glad you guys asked. We're going to give it some new features, specifically Justicar's Challenge. The Justicar attempts to compel a creature into a duel. That sounds familiar. One creature that the Justicar can see within 30 feet must succeed a DC 13 Wisdom saving throw. On a failed save, the creature is drawn and compelled to the Justicar's demand. For up to 1 minute, as if concentrating on a spell, the creature has disadvantage on attack rolls against other creatures other than the Justicar, and must make a wisdom save throw each attempt to move to a space more than 30 feet away from it. If it succeeds on a saving throw, the effect doesn't restrict the target's movement for that turn. Now, the effect does end if the Justicar makes attack against another creature, casts a spell that targets another, basically does anything that hits another creature, right? So now you've got the challenge, the Justicar's challenge. We're going to top it off with some legendary actions because...
Why not?
Why not? we're going to give it 3 legendary actions. It can use a cantrip for 1 point, and it can use Healing Touch up to 5 a day, which is the one of the features that the Oni has. And it can get Blinding Blast that it can do for 2 actions. The Justicar targets 1 creature it can see within 30 feet. The target must succeed a DC 13 con saving throw or be blinded until the end of turn.
Flashbang.
Woo! So, yeah, it's flashbang. So the Justicar basically is, we have just made kind of a conquest-style paladin, one that can be good, can be evil, that challenges and forces player characters into one-on-one combat, as well as being able to dish out a few healing and very difficult Blinding Blast becomes a very savage penalty to have to deal with in combat. What do you guys think about this?
A little control and a little bit of a hit stick.
Hit stick, I like that.
A win.
What do you think, Jeffrey?
I think paladins are in... I think this is cool. I like this concept. But I'm sorry if this is unrelated, but I feel like I'm getting a lot of cool paladin stuff lately. I feel like, wasn't that movie The Green Knight like all about, like, basically about paladins? The A24 movie. I think there was a movie recently that was about paladins. I think something about paladins are in the air. Anyway, I think it's cool. Give it a thumbs up.
What about you, B?
I like it in the concept of, because we're sitting here talking about minigames, you can imagine a 5v5 or 4v4 tournament that's going on in like the Gladiator Stadium. Not like a fight to the death, but just a sportsmanship type thing. And the other team has this guy at their lead.
Oh, nice. I love it.
Yeah, just like, come on, what do you got? Flashbang.
Flashbang. And it's important to know that this is a legendary action, which means he can do it multiple times in a round against multiple targets. That's one of the key things. Now, honestly, making it a bright light so makes it very holy, but honestly, I love to play a dirty Justicar who's just throwing sand at people's eyes.
Bucket sand! Like,
the reason he wins so often is because he's fighting dirty, or she. And that was kind of one of the things. So I started writing a novel, and there's Justicars in them, and half of them are really there to do a good job, and the other half are the traditional a-hole knight type characters who are just douchebags to everybody, and this is something that kind of came out of that. So enjoy. It'll really throw your players for a loop with forcing them to fight him even if they don't want, because you're not gonna, the Justicar is not gonna target the paladin, they're gonna target the wizard
because it's squishy.
Because they're squishy.
Come here, I'm going to get you.
Come and get some. All right, I think that'll do it for our monster variant, the Justicar. If you like stuff like this, please consider becoming a Patreon. I publish these with full backstory and lore that you can feed to your players to our patrons. So nice, beautiful artwork, wonderful layout, all that jazz. Mm. Brandon, would you like to tell us about our encounter today?
Huh, yeah, sure. Our encounter is a tavern game, 18 Mules Tribality.
Yes, I did not make this. I found this on the internet, as with most things.
18 Mules is a variation of the classic and well-known blackjack card game, but contextualized in a way that feels more real in a fantasy setting, while also making it a dice game. The purpose of the game is to carry your wagon full of gold without spending any more than needed.
Is this
Oregon Trail?
That's what I thought. You died from dysentery.
For that, you as a player roll 3d6. After doing so, you can add the extra roll to the pile as many times as you want in order to have the sum be as closest to 18 as possible. You can decide to stop at any time, but the further you are, the less points you get. Moreover, if the sum ever surpasses 18, you lose your turn and the next player gets to do the same from the start. The dice are supposed to represent the number of mules you bought from the farmer. You only have 18 ropes to tie the wagons to the mule. And fewer mules don't have enough strength to carry the gold all the way to the nearest town without making any stops. Oh, I know it's a pretty lame excuse for why the game plays that way, but so were the instructions for those kind of games. The objective is to score 100 points. The number of mules you have when you decide to stop adding is the number of points you get. If you surpass 18, you get no points. Last but not least, you are to get a perfect score of 3 sixes in the first 3 dice you roll. In your turn, you not only immediately win 18 points, but also 10 extra points. Role-playing the NPCs. In a fantasy setting, the gods of luck are very prominent during gambling and are called upon for luck all the time.
bless me, please.
I can't be everywhere at once.
Oh. I'm only one god. Go!
Make sure to mention Taimora, or whichever goddess of luck there is in your settings when role-playing an NPC. If you want them to be cheaters, make them whisper the names of the gods of trickery and divination. A smart player might be able to comprehend the situation after hearing this.
Ooh, I love this. As a game designer... Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I love, you know, it's a very simple concept, but I like all the story that's built into the minigame. Mm-hmm. So like, and of course, the author sort of sold it out a little bit with their comment of like, this story I made sucks. Sorry. But like, it didn't. I actually liked it. I thought it was cool. It's like, oh, there's a reason there's a reason we're doing this. They not only thought of the minigame rules, but they also thought of the history of the minigame. Where it comes from, and then they also thought of this element affecting the minigame, the gods, the store, another element. I thought it was very cool.
Yeah, absolutely, I love it. And now I feel like I need to come up with a dysentery disease to my D&D games for travel.
they were saying mules, but I was like, it's got to be buffalo.
There. Yeah, shooting
buffalo.
Ox or buffalo.
You know, people literally die from their own farts.
I keep thinking like the D&D equivalent to Oregon Trail. Okay, I have a bigger background, so I start off with 1,000 gold. How many arrows can I get with that?
God, it's been so long since I played that. That's all I did instead of schoolwork. We're here to use the computers for schoolwork, psych. All right, I think that'll do it for our encounter. I thought this was a great encounter to add to this particular episode. So,
yeah.
Tavern Game, 18 Mules by Tribility.
And next up, we have our magic item. Slag Shaper's Stagger Hammer. That's a mouthful.
That's what she said.
Indeed. It's an uncommon warhammer that requires attunement. Forged with a slag from a powerful magical artifact. Ooh, background right there already. The slag shaper dwarves let nothing of power go unused. You gain a +1 bonus to attack and damage made with this magical weapon. In addition, while you are attuned to this weapon, If you score a critical hit against a creature, they must make a DC 13 con saving throw or become stunned until the end of its next turn. Nice.
You know what I like about this? It's a slag weapon. You know what slag is, right?
It's this material that floats to the top when they're doing... It's the excess crap that they don't
want to use. Yeah, it's the trash
that they're refining, yeah.
It's all the garbage. They take all the garbage metal together and say, here's a weapon.
But and because, I like that you're stunned, which implies like, oh wow, I was hit with such a garbage weapon. I can't believe it. I have to sit and think about that for a minute.
Well, and I love the little bit of flavor that I gave it with it being part of a power. It's the leftovers from a powerful artifact, which explains why this weapon made from leftovers has magical properties.
Did you just hit me with garbage?
Everything that the dwarves touch is pristine to be used. I could have thought of something better then, but I didn't, so that's what you get. Everything that we forge is great, even the garbage.
Now I'm thinking about when I ran a Forge Domain cleric and we came across a weapon, and I rolled basically a nat one from a skill check to identify it on my own, and basically my response was, it's elf crap. Get the mage cast identify on it, and it's going to be a legendary dragon slaying spear.
Ooh, nice.
Detail. You repeat that back, it's still elf crap.
Still garbage. That's just how it goes. So we got an actual question here from our boy. According to Getting Bad Things, if you are stunned, aren't attacks against you auto crits? No. A stunned creature is incapacitated and automatic fails strength and dex saves, but rolls against it do have advantage. I think you're thinking of paralyzed.
Hold up. Check it. Incapacitated.
What?
See condition. Incapacitated.
Oh, shit. Yeah, let's go see incapacitated.
Other direction.
Yeah, I know which way it is.
Think of the creature can't take actions or reactions.
So, okay. No. Yeah. So paralyzed is auto crit.
Yeah.
Anyway, so awesome. So this item, I designed it for one of the... extraordinary expeditions for our Kickstarter for Magma Forge that I'm going to include in it. So hopefully you guys like it. One of the Dwarven clan's names are Slag Shapers. Guess what their job is? To repurpose everyone else's garbage.
Okay. All right. We may deal with garbage, but it's the finest garbage.
Shout out to Ian Wood, who says hammer time.
That's me.
With regards to this weapon. And I feel like that should be built in as like some kind of bonus. If you like with Thor's hammer, like by the power of whatever, you know.
By
like
the power of hammer time.
Hammer time.
Viva Las Vegas.
I love it.
For those who get that reference.
I get it.
Okay.
All right. That'll do it for our magic item. Jeffrey, would you like to tell us about our Dungeon Master tick today?
Absolutely. Well, I'm gonna paraphrase a little bit if you don't mind on this.
Absolutely.
One.
It is long.
This one's all about. And I think this is very true. But Dungeon Masters, you know, they have different. They have a particular set of skills. you know, Dungeon Masters have certain things that they're not every Dungeon Master is the same, and they have some skills that they are good at, excellent at. And some may be less so, some things that are weaknesses. And first of all, just saying, like, that's okay. I think there's been a sort of a thing in D&D with the rise of actual play podcasts where people are like, oh, man, like, if I'm not playing, like, you know, what Critical Role does at that level, like, then I'm not really playing D&D. Or, like, my players are, like, expecting that, you know, that kind of... But, like, you know, those... You know, those players, that DM, you know, the ones in the actual plays are really good actors. They're going to be, they emphasize their role playing. That's something that they are strong at. You might not have that strength as a DM, but that doesn't mean you can't run a great game. It just means to, it just means to play to your strengths when you are designing and when you're playing. You know, think about, you know, if, okay, maybe role playing isn't your thing. But maybe, you know, NPC, maybe the nuances of faction motives and politics, you know, maybe lore is your thing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so, okay, like, you're going to, you know, you're going to create a very deep world. you know, for your players, like if that's your strength, right? And like lean into that, and that's cool. And your players will appreciate that. But then also, you know, we focus on our strengths and we work on our weaknesses, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe you're not the best role play, you know, maybe you're not the best role play doing combat narration or NPC personas, voices or what have you. Maybe that's not your thing. Well, you know, maybe consider, you know, hanging out with another DM friend, you know, who is really good at that and like shadowing them or playing with them and watching what they do, getting advice from them. Maybe you even want to go so far as to take like an improv class, like at your local comedy theater, you know, to build up those skills.
Absolutely.
You know, the other way too, if you're like an actor and you're like worried, maybe I'm not playing, you know, maybe we're not playing close enough to the rules. Maybe we're, you know, you can hit the books, you know, you can read the rules. You can watch YouTube videos, you know, you can work on those things as well. But especially when you're first starting off, like, you know, figure out what are your strengths. And the way I think you determine what your strengths are is you see how your players react to different things, right, that you mm-hmm. do at the table. And like, you know, you can see from their emotions. Oh, if you're like describing this really well, like maybe they're all like wrapped in attention, you know, at the table, you know, or, you know, maybe if you're, you know, managing the, you know, you're managing the encounter really well. Like, oh, your players are having fun in this this combat scenario. Right, like, right. Yeah, you're doing a good job of, you know, keeping things spirited and lively, you know.
Absolutely.
And also asking, like, hey, like, you know, what do you think? Asking your players, feel free to do that. You know, I think that's totally fair. Like, hey, like, what's really working for you in the game? And where do you think I could improve, you know, if you're up for that. You know, you could also do it anonymously too, through like a Google form, if you were like afraid of like hurting the DM's feelings, you know. But I think that there's a lot of ways that you can get better.
Right, right.
But but definitely be proud of your strengths. Absolutely. That's what I would say. Be proud of your strengths and lean on your strengths and work on your weaknesses when you get a chance to help round yourself out.
Like, one example I kept on thinking of for some strange reason was, like, when GM talking to other, like, game masters going, I want to run enemies that actually fight technically and smart, but my players aren't that, and I don't want to destroy them. What do I do? No, GM, just run lower CR monsters who actually fight intelligently, because they're lower CR, they don't do as much damage. But the tactics make them actually a threat.
I love it. Kobolds are a really good example of that. Kobolds, yes. And goblins can be terrifying if you played them with a semblance of intelligence. I was just actually...
And somebody who actually understands goblin? Oh, crap. Here comes another adventuring party again. You know what to do, boys.
I love it. All right. So that'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip. Know your design strengths and styles, unless you've got something to add. Yes.
Oh, I want to quickly highlight this in the chat because I think this is a good point. Believe your players when they say they're having fun, says getting bad at things. Stop second guessing yourself. And yeah, if you're a DM and you're not confident in your skills, if your players say you're having fun, they almost certainly are.
I don't ever believe them.
No, we want to be encouraging. I think that's exactly right. You know, take that praise and run with it. You know, be proud of it. And it's hard to be a DM, so cut yourself some slack. It's not easy to do it. So the fact that you are doing it and your players are telling you you're having fun, that puts you in a very high percentile as far Absolutely. As I'm concerned of DM. So be proud.
Yeah. Be proud and accept that you can't do everything perfect. That's my motto.
That's right.
All right, that'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip. Moving on to our player tip of the podcast.
Don't be a dick.
And you can avoid dickitude by including mementos. Not Mentos, because that's what I typed out the first time I made this.
Do, 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 do.
You can nearly every... Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that the players that stick the Mentos into the lava and it, like, bursts.
destroys the bad guy in the town below.
Into the volcano.
Nearly every person that becomes an adventurer has endured some difficult challenges. Many have lost family and friends. Entire clans and kingdoms rise and fall during the life of long-lived adventurers such as elves and dwarves. As a reminder of this hardship, it becomes common for many adventurers to carry some sort of memento from their previous life. When building your character, consider creating a memento that serves as a reminder of a particularly challenging moment in that character's life. And that's a really great one that if you tie it into defining moments like your character's decision to become this thing. So, you know, you become a paladin or you become a wizard, you know. Your background kind of says this is where you started, here's where you ended, and your class is kind of where you're going. And so finding a like one time my wizard had a chess piece, and that chess piece came from a game that he had to gamble on and lost everything of his, including his family, due to a poor gambling result. And so he went on to become a wizard so he would never be weak same situation again. So he carried the chess piece from the game that he lost that cost him everything he'd ever held dear. And so that's a really good memento. And you bet your ass when my DM stole it from me that he cared to do nothing else but chase it down. And he knew that's what was going to happen. So they can be powerful tools, not only for interaction when players say, you know, why are you spinning this thing in your hands, or something for the DM to pull from. So
why do you carry a broken short bow? I don't want to talk about it.
classic tough guy answer. And then a couple sessions later, they will open up to you.
Comes to find out when he was younger, he dry fired it in front of his wife and smacked her in the face and killed her.
Oh, no! That's some Kratos shit there, buddy.
Kratos.
There's consequences to killing a god.
Yeah. How would you know?
You know what... It works really, I agree with you, that works really well in storytelling, and it's a device you see used in movies and TV all the time.
Right.
You know, the heart-shaped locket, the really framed photo, you know, the trophy, you know, these objects can contain, can contain a lot of memory, they can contain, you know, just like in real life. So right. I agree, it's a great tool for world building, for character building, for sure.
Alrighty, before we close out today, every episode we'd like to give away fat loots, don't we, Brandon?
Mm-hmm. Yum, 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 yum.
You want to tell us what we're giving away today?
The Dead Wizard's Tower by Jordan Carmichael? Carmichael.
That word.
That's yes. What that sounds like to me.
A wizard is dead. That's not a surprise. But his work lives on. A mysterious tower appears as if from nowhere, looking as though it has erupted from the ground beneath it. You approach to find a halfling wizard appraising it. He informs you that the tower's owner is now dead. It wants you to enter and retrieve something for him.
Dun, dun, dun. I love it. Who is our winner today, Ian?
A Sykes Gundlach, I guess.
I'll count it. A Sykes Gundlach, congratulations. Email us at critacademy@gmail.com to collect your reward. While we're at it, who is our winner for the Target Run giveaway? Is your number guess of how many times our guest Jeffrey has flipped his wand?
I have no idea.
I feel really bad because I had to ask in private chat to see he was still doing it because I hadn't actually seen him, but I was looking at it the whole time.
The winner of the contest is Lily Nielsen. Congratulations, Lily. You win a free copy of Target Run.
If you didn't win anything, have no fear. You can head on over to CritAcademy.com and subscribe for your chance to win Fat Loots. We always give away Fat Loots every single episode, so go and subscribe. If you enjoy the show and you would like to, and you want to support us, consider visiting us on our website at CritAcademy.com, following us on YouTube. Please follow us on YouTube. If you're watching across any platform, we're working hard to grow our audience on YouTube, so maybe consider watching over there. We can get you all in one location. Would be great. Or follow us on social media and leave us a review on iTunes, please. All the podcatchers use iTunes, so even if you don't use it to watch or listen to the podcast, please do that. All right. Now, we couldn't close out this episode without giving one more shout-out to ourselves. Don't miss out on our extraordinary expeditions. Our current Kickstarter is running live right now. We are 60% funded. It's modular adventures for your 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons game. If you're watching in the live stream right now, we have little over 2 weeks left. If you are listening to the podcast, that's only 1 week left. We just did an in-depth interview about the project with Mildred over on YouTube, so please check that out. If you go over there right now, there's a big link. You can get Far Touched Adventure for free, absolutely, just for checking it out. Please do, if you do pick it up and you like it, please leave a review. Other people get it as a free adventure. And you'll get to see kind of what we're going for. And who doesn't love sending a group of player characters into a town completely overrun and infested with monsters at level 5 with an obelisk involved? That sounds like fun.
And I'll say this much, as, I mean, you have obviously done most of the writing for the project and with a few other collaborators. I'm not involved with that. I read through Fartouched. I thought it was a solid adventure. You know, the other 9 are anything close to like it and how solid it is. Give me more!
Thank you. I appreciate that. We tried to make all of our adventures extraordinary. So, in my interview, the guy's like, so what do you think about throwing things too strong? Actually, the first adventure throws a CR10 at the group of 5 level 5s because the goal isn't to kill it, but to come to an agreement and understanding. Anyways, so with that, Jeff, would you like to give yourself one more plug before we close out about you, where they can find you and follow you and pick up all your fat loots?
Absolutely. Well, you could find me on Twitter at Jeffrey Golden. That's G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y, like the giraffe. G-O-L-D-E-N, like the color. I've got a newsletter called Adventure Snack. Twice a month, I send out free, like, Choose Your Path adventure games. tiny ones that I send via email. And, thank you. Yeah, it's those are free. It's free to play at adventuresnack.com. Those are the two main places you can find me on the internet. And, of course, Target Run is on the DMs Guild. You can search for Target Run, and you will find it there.
Yep. You'll also find a link in our blog for this episode at CritAcademy.com. It has an affiliate link, so if you're willing to pick it up, we get a small kickback from that. So you support us as streamers as well as Jeffrey as a content creator. So
I love that.
You're talking about adventure snacks. Like, yeah, they're short. Choose your own adventures. My brain goes, why are they so short? Well, you can go left or go right. I'm going to go left. You get smashed by a boulder. Try again.
I try to make it so that every ending has something positive. Because I always go...
Like electrical charge?
And when I would get like an ending that was just like completely like just you end up in a meat grinder. The end. It's like, oh, God. Oh, God. So I tried to put something in that's...
I love it. That's well, you got one person going to sign up. So.
Now I'm thinking about the text-based game Adventure back in the day.
Oh, those are good. I love those.
Yeah. You are by the fence that has a sign on it that says, do not enter. Me. Cross fence. A wizard suddenly appears next to you. He stares down at you and says, me. You turn into a frog. The end.
All right. Well, I think that'll do it for our show today. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your guest, Jeffrey.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
I'm your co-host, Brandon. Thanks for listening.
Keep your blades sharp and spells prepared, heroes.